Okay, whoops, let's get started. Somebody asked me after the last talk where I started talking about articles, how do you go about writing for Physics Today? And there's a two-track. You could either contact us if you had an idea for writing an article about Physics Today, and just say you're interested, and we like to get contact before you actually write the article, because sometimes we might want to help you define the scope a little differently. We may have just had an article on a related subject, and we might want you to steer you slightly in a different direction, or might say, well, you're biting off more than you could chew, you know. And so we can work with people who suggest that they want to write for us, or we might say, you know, wait a year, we'd be more interested in it then. Sometimes people do send us unsolicited articles, and we review them both internally and externally and decide whether we want to accept them. And I don't know the ratio. It's probably no more than 50%. Because you can imagine we get some articles of the type that they want to. They've overthrown Einstein's theory or something. But there's some serious articles that we've gotten just unsolicited. And then a lot of times we decide it's time to have a good review article on a certain topic. Then we'll call a lot of people and find out both, is that a good topic, is this a good time to run it, and also who would be a good author for it. So solicited, unsolicited, and unsolicited proposals, they're all welcome. Just keep the door open. I should mention there's other ways to write for Physics Today or to contribute to it. We mentioned that those are authored articles. We talked last time about the difference between the opinion section and reference frame. Reference frame is something for which you have to be an invited regular contributor. But anyone can write in an opinion. And we choose it on basis of, is that a topic of general interest at that time, and is this a reasonable comment on that topic? So we like to get opinion pieces. We don't feel we run quite enough of them. Then we have, of course, we have a book section for which we need reviewers. So if you wanted to be a reviewer of books in your area or textbooks or of popularizations, you might just let me know. I'll get your name to the right person. It's better if you just say in general you'd be interested in reviewing books than if you write to us and say, I want to review a particular book. If you did that, we'd check out whether you're too closely involved with the author. One way or the other. One way or the other. Right, exactly. We get very suspicious about how first to review a specific book. And then I always appreciate not actually writing for Physics Today in our news section, Search and Discovery, but I appreciate having tips. If you've done something great or know someone you think has done something great, it's really useful to get an email or a call about something. Okay, so I thought there's still a lot to talk about in terms of writing articles. Last time we talked about broader issues about structure and so forth, and we'll get a little bit more into the actual wording of it. And this is the only viewgraph that sort of has didactic material on it. So I was thinking about, you know, there's so many rules that or useful advice for writing an article, but I came up with sort of five general types of advice. And first, keep in mind to stress your main points. And that involves just sitting back and really, it's surprising even if you know your field really well. Just thinking critically, can I say in two sentences what I want this whole article to say? And, you know, clearly you're not going to say it in all the detail or describe it clearly, but just the exercise of being able to say it succinctly will help you maybe focus your thoughts and hence focus the article. Make sure those main points come out and don't get lost in the details. So I always think that clear writing is clear thinking. I said that backwards, but clear writing is clear thinking. And it's really important to eject details that detract. It's so tempting. You think, oh, there's this neat little thing. I'll just throw this in. I'll just add this. And that's fine, but you're taking space and attention away from the main points you want to make. Okay, then it's clear that you should structure your story. Take the reader from the familiar to the unknown. So it's start with something that the reader can grab onto and just lead them along, gradually introducing the new material. I think it's useful to start with an overview and then move on to the specifics. And don't just jump in and say, here's all the details, and then later tell them how it goes together. You might lose them in the process. I think it's useful to start, here's where we're going, here's what this whole thing is intended to be, and here's exactly how it gets there. Satisfy your readers. So always picture this person who's not you and maybe is a person you're just going to meet at a cocktail party and you want to be able to explain this, whatever it is, to them. Just have that other unknown, unfamiliar face looking at you and anticipate any questions they might have and help make sure you answer their questions. I think it helps, especially in an article, stay away from the mathematics explanations and strive for the physical or phenomenological explanations, because those are the ones that I'm going to get across to a reader not in your field or a public reader. So my husband always said he loves Susan Stamberg of NPR, because Susan always anticipated the questions that my husband would have asked of the person being interviewed. So if you can anticipate your reader's question and answer them up ahead, that's great. And then simplify and streamline. I have lots of examples. Of course, avoid jargon terms inside your field, and either define them, or better yet, just use other words for them. Find another way of talking around the same thing. Avoid pretentious terms and wordy phrases. Someone once told me, the guy who trained me into Physics Today said, don't ever use there are or there is. And so I didn't. I mean, but sometimes it was really hard. And usually when I worked to keep that phrase out, the sentence was much better. It was much more direct. I sometimes use there is or there are now for emphasis, but only in special circumstances. But there's other things, the fact that, or it is to be noted that. And those things can just go, and your article will be better for it. And then season, wherever you can, introduce some humor or colorful examples, be more specific rather than general. So those are general principles, and of course everything is taught better by specific examples. So I'm going to start working now, and you all read this paragraph. Now this was a description of an experiment that was submitted. There was a paper in PRL, and people who submit papers to PRL these days are invited to submit a paragraph like this that's intended to be for the general public, that describes their experiment and why it's exciting. The hopes that the PR people at American Institute of Physics will pick it up and publicize it. So this is one experimentalist group's attempt to communicate to the public. So you read it over and then we'll talk about how well they did. Is there anyone who's not finished reading? Okay. So we might keep in mind these principles I said. What do you think is the main point here? Does anyone say what the main point is? What is this? What they did? What did enable them? I mean, what was the big thing they did? Well, I transferred energy from one beam to another, but I'm not sure why. Why they want to do that?
It gives some potential applications.
Of yeah.
Accelerating electrons.
Yeah, and then there's this funny thing in the middle, where one consequence of the energy transfer was that both the energy and quality of a laser-accelerated electron beam were also enhanced. Well, does anyone understand where this electron beam came from? Yeah, okay. So where are some of the unknown terms in here? You say you don't know what quality of a laser accelerated. Right. So Fabry-Perot. So that's a comparison that doesn't help. So it doesn't help to compare it to something if the people don't know what that other thing is. I think, you know, if it's a general public, you're in trouble already here. Well, with an optical beam, I'm in trouble with the... There's a good explanation. Yeah, I mean, you could probably go without this. Well, so much for my plan to write in. Do they keep? Yeah, I mean, I don't understand where this electron beam came from. So I would have. I know when you.
Presumably, they had electrons.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, so I know when you stick a, where is this thing about the electron beam? Oh, okay, this laser accelerator beam, where does that come from, right?
Yeah, because over the top they say two high intensity laser beams cross in a plasma.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think once
that's
you do...
Yeah.
And I think there is an effect by which if you stick a laser beam in a plasma, you can accelerate an electron beam. But I think that's something they could have told us. So how we don't know how. We're told it is something that's important for applying this effect to the production of energy by inertial confinement. But it's not clear what is the connection at all between what they actually did and what its promises. If you could, yeah? Yes, where's that? That's the district. Okay, you mean that this is an ambiguous reference here, right? Is that what you're saying? This transient standing wave interference pattern is analogous to that found in to the pattern found in permanent optical mirrors, which pattern are commonly used to reflect high laser power. I think they mean the mirrors, which
I...
Yeah. When I first read this, I thought that was the central point, that they made a better mirror. And that may well be. But I don't know, again, how that relates to the applications they mention at the end. So that would be the question. Is this your main point? So it's not clear. If either this or this is the main point, either one would be better ways to start it with, I think.
I would guess that the last sentence is more hoped for applications or potential applications rather than real applications.
Yeah. Well, I've pegged a lot of news stories on hopeful applications, just as a way to stimulate interest for the reader in something. But so, actually, I even thought that orthogonal is a word that I would hesitate to use for a general public. I'd rather use at right angles, too. Okay, so this isn't going to get a lot of people excited about science. Okay, here's another example.
And this,
yeah. What?
Accepted in PRL.
Yes, this, when these things are written, the papers are already accepted in PRL.
This is supposed to be a description of the paper. Was that intended to a general public?
I think they thought that it was for the general. I think it's for the general public. When it's the public relations part of American Institute of Physics that asked them to write such popular paragraphs. Oh, it's the authors want to be considered to be featured in Physical Review Focus. So they write this summary and say, here's what we want to do, and they hope that the Physical Review Focus, the people who write that, they hope that they will interest those people. And I don't know whether that was chosen by Physical Review Focus, but it would have been rewritten anyway.
But maybe the audience of Physical Review Focus is not the general audience.
Well, that's true. The audience for Physical Review Focus is physicists, but not in the field of, say, laser plasmas. But here's an audience of general physicists, and you think, you know, and they didn't communicate to us, right? So they didn't even reach that audience. So here's another one. Let's see if these guys do any better.
Science audience, that seems much better.
Right.
I don't know whether a regular person would know what kilohertz and megahertz
means. Yeah, well, let's be, if they aimed at the public, it's clear that they have missed the mark. So let's criticize it from the point of view of an audience of general physicists. So what do you think is the main point of this? Based on measurements on rocks and small, I guess, rocks in laboratories. I mean, as far as I can see, they did their experiments on rocks that are not buried in the earth, and there's somewhere in there. There's an hypothesis, I think, that this will reflect what's happening in earthquakes also, and. Right. Although I found that this wording, on the other hand, was misleading, because it's not on the other hand. It's really, it's evidence for...
As corroboration, right?
Yeah, yeah, at the same time would have been more appropriate, so I thought that was... So I personally thought that starting here, I stumbled on the juxtaposition of these two terms. But I, you know, to me this would have been, I'd rather have, if you just have one paragraph, I think I would have rather start off with this, but... Mm-hmm. So are there questions that you had that still unanswered after reading this? Or did that, did they... Yes. Right, right. Yeah, I think there again a little bit more critical thinking about exactly what you want to say, not just that, okay, I'm it's material science and geophysics. Just that I'm using material science to address a problem in geophysics.
A silly thing, obvious thing that, you know, they have EM, which they don't explain in the first paragraph,
right.
Electromagnetic, right, to EM later on, which really drives you, but what is your take on using such abbreviation?
In something that's short, I wouldn't do it. It makes it sound needlessly technical. I mean, it's not going to be that much longer to write out the full words. If you had a full article, especially if you had a space limit, I could see it maybe. QCD, I mean, you don't want to write out.
I don't think you need EQ.
No, or EQ. I mean, I've read a lot of geophysics papers and I've never seen earthquake abbreviated EQ. So.
I kind of stumble in the sense, starting on the other hand, that word falling. Broad range EM activities falling. I had to read it a couple of times, but falling makes it sound sort of decreasing.
Especially when you're talking about earthquakes, yeah. I don't think that this is a very precise phrase anyway. I think, does he mean broad frequency range? Otherwise, what is a broad range of activities? Different types of events, different types of cracking that have the same frequency band, or broad range of frequency bands associated with EM activities. I don't know which one he meant. I don't think that, I thought that was ambiguous.
Except for that one big part, they don't talk about it. Most of it is based on electromagnetic radiation.
They apparently have measured both. They apparently have measured both acoustics and EM in rocks. I don't think they're telling us whether these broad range of frequency bands are both acoustic and EM. Oh, that's right. You're right. So
the acoustic seems like a red herring. They don't really pay much attention.
Yeah, or it's an oversight. Maybe they have seen those. But I think they need to establish the link, better establish the link between geophysics, or the earthquakes, EQ, and rocks. What about undefined terms or jargon, even for a non-science major? Well, they have this when a rock sample.
Yeah, that previous sentence that they are made towards monitoring of the microfractures which occur before the final breakup in the prefocal area.
Well, see, but again, we don't, prefocal area, I don't know what that final breakup, and I don't know whether rocks have something called a pre-breakup, a final breakup, or whether this was in fact in the earth.
I didn't infer that they'd actually done a lot of lab experiments, but you can't tell. Yeah, in the sentence before, it talks about microfractures which rupture in the Earth's interior.
Well, they said have never directly observed rupture in the Earth's interior. Often that's the kind of sentence that precedes the sentence, but we have. But now we have. And they don't really say, but now we have. So you don't know whether they never have, and we did our experiments on rocks, or, but we did. And they don't make it clear, okay?
Use the word experimental, which makes it sound like it was a controlled experiment, as opposed to, in the second sentence, if they said observational result, as opposed to experimental result, I'm not sure they mean that carefully.
No. Oh. The one thing that makes me think that they did some their lab work in the lab is this phrase here. But you know, we as readers should not have to work this hard. You need to sometimes it helps to write something, come back and read what you wrote, and maybe you yourself won't understand it. Or just, as again, just keep your reader in mind and say, have I presented this clearly to someone who didn't know beforehand what I did? Okay. We demolished this enough yet? But it takes a lot of work. It's not all that easy. I mean, David's first reaction was this isn't bad. You know, you have a general sense.
Better, a lot better than the one before.
Yeah. But there's always room to make it better. I mean, every one of us who's ever written something knows that you can come back and, boy, you can make that better. It's a lot of work. Okay. Just to show you that even that poor writing is no reflection on your abilities as a physicist. Here is some original wording by a very famous physicist who is no longer alive. Maybe you can guess who it is. So far as the principles of the quantum theory are concerned, the point which has been emphasized heretofore is the radical departure from our usual conceptions of quantum mechanics and electrodynamical phenomena. It probably is a translation. If not from German, from another language. A little Danish, right. This is Niels Bohr. As I have attempted to show in recent years, it appears possible, however, to adopt a point of view which suggests that the quantum theory may nevertheless be regarded as a rational generalization of ordinary conceptions. Everybody with us? As may be seen from the postulates of the quantum theory, and particularly the frequency relation, a direct connection between the spectra and the motion, the kind required by classical dynamics, is excluded. But at the same time, the form of these postulates leads to another relation of remarkable nature. So it could be snappier, right? Yeah, I think there's a story about his meeting with Roosevelt where he couldn't get, I think it was over the atomic bomb project, and Roosevelt left shaking his head about who was that guy, because he just couldn't communicate. And I guess when he spoke, he muttered, so it wasn't that much better. Okay. So does anyone have an idea how this might be improved? Not the thought. We don't want to improve on the thought, but just the expression of it.
The problem with Bohr is writing the quantum one thing. It had something to do with how clear he was in his own mind and how what he was trying to say.
Oh, yeah?
And he had a lot of difficulty with how he could take care of his weapon. Probably, right here.
Well, yeah, that's true. In fact, I really wouldn't know how to rewrite that last sentence because I don't know what he meant, and I guess I'm not familiar with what's meant by the frequency relation unless it's Planck's. Is it? Yeah, I mean, if that's what he meant, it's not clear.
Something earlier was this later, but the other relation is the corresponding picture.
I don't know. I got this from a book on writing, and I can show you how the book decided to rewrite Neil's words. But I got this as partly as an example of the fact, let's see, that's the fact that is something I wouldn't use in writing. I think a lot of the simplification you would do to this would consist of taking out what I call wordy phrases. So far as the principles of quantum theory are concerned, the point which has been emphasized here too, hitherto, I think, and the writer of this book on writing just got rid of most of those wordy phrases. The principle of the quantum theory depart radically from our usual conception, usual idea of classical mechanics and electrodynamics. So, I don't know if you can. Yes. Although they may nevertheless be thought as rational extension of classical concepts. And then they wrote this last sentence in a way I'm not sure is accurate. So it's very hard when you're trying to rewrite somebody else's writing. And it's problematic unless you can have that person to consult with. So I don't know whether the second sentence is correctly done or not. So, but we're talking here mostly about your own writing, which you're free to tamper with.
I guess it's a little bit subtle. The above sentence is much clearer, I think.
Yes.
But maybe made clearer by cutting off some.
This actually. Yeah.
It's made. What?
The meaning is totally different. But for sentence.
He's saying there's no. The one above says there's no direct connection between quantum theory and classical dynamics, but you're saying the original was there's no direct connection between the spectra and the motion.
No.
Oh, okay.
There is no direct connection between quantum theory and classical dynamics, as can be seen from the form of the quantum theory.
Uh-huh. Right. Yes. Yeah.
If you look at the four says at the end, right. At the same time, these quantum postulates themselves lead us to another relation.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I think that's right. 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 Yeah, I thought so. I thought so too. Yeah, yeah.
This was in this book.
So there are no right answers in how to write. Well, and you lose a flavor. Now, what were you trying to say? Yes. Mm-hmm. So you prefer a little bit more of the vagueness of the first version. Yeah.
If something is said very clear, then that's the end of the law. Mm-hmm.
Read something between the lines, right.
I presume this is an introduction to the book.
Yeah, I to be fair, I'm not even, I mean, this book did not, I didn't bother trying to trace the original by Bohr to where it came from. It wouldn't be fair, I mean, it could possibly be a transcript of something he said orally, which in which case it wouldn't be fair at all, because I think one is a lot less succinct in the written word, in the spoken word. Okay. Well, then I have some other examples of just other rules that one might watch for. Again, avoiding unnecessary words and phrases. Maybe these are more fair examples. Aside from this most fundamental constraint, the primary concept upon which the theory is based concerns the fact that the surface of the global ocean, the so-called geodesy of classical geodesy, is a surface of constant gravitational potential. So I think basically you don't need, aside from this, you don't need the primary concept upon which the theory is based concerns the fact that. So you could just say our geophysical model requires surface of the ocean to be as surface of gravitational potential. So I just thought that was a particularly good example of words that you really just get in the way. And then another.
The first part, the original never mentions the geophysical model, but they sort of threw that in because they needed to think of the word now. The word model never
that's not, I took this from, I actually rewrote this, but I took it from, I had seen the whole paragraph, and I knew that person was talking about, he mentioned the theory is bad, the theory. He's talking, by theory, he's really talking about his own geophysical model. The constraint was conservation of mass, I think. Yeah. So he was just saying, okay, we're designing this geophysical model, and first we have to put in conservation of energy of mass, and then we have to put in this. And I just took that sentence out. So. I think you're right. That's right. You could be, yeah. In addition, yeah. You don't need to have those words either. So there's further shortening one can do. Okay. The other one, the next example of these ultra wordiness, the existing nature of Mount St. Helens volcanic ash spewage. I like that word, was handled through the applied use of computer modeling capabilities. So, with computers, we modeled how much ash spewed from Mount St. Helens. So, I mean, you can be very simple and clear. You could. Yes. I didn't stress that I meant to in these previous things that we read, but they tended to be passive.
It's okay to say a mountain put out the ashes.
Yes. Oh, it's much better to say that than to say the ashes were put out. So, you know, in scientific writing, the tradition is passive tense, but active voice makes a huge difference in the readability and the liveliness of one's writing. Did you have something else you wanted to say?
I'm trying to decide whether ash spewed. Ash were spewed?
Oh, yeah. Ash or was.
Word.
Is ash plural?
It looks as if something, I think it's just wrong.
How many ashes were spewed? Yes, that's right. We modeled how much.
Was
Mount St. Helens spewed, because that's who did the spewing was Mount St. Helens. Okay. So far you're not letting either the original or the edited version pass. It goes to show you can never stop editing. Another little pointers, it's always good to give a feeling for units. You know, how big, how small. You introduce a unit, you might define it as so many gauss or whatever. But especially if you're writing for the general public, you want to give a colorful, if possible, size description of your unit. So here's an example where fuel pellets are compared to the size of BBs. So, you know, people know what that is. No? My brother had a BB gun when he was little. So we always had little BBs spilled all over the floor. There's like shots from a shotgun. Have you ever seen? It's the size of it, smaller than a pea, I guess. A petit pois. Okay, so maybe BB wasn't such a good analogy. There's at least one person who doesn't know what that means. Power needed to ignite fusion in the pellets is 100 trillion watts, 200 times less than the power released from fusion. So this is relevant because they're saying to ignite it, it's much less than what we're going to release in fusing. One could also have given an example in terms of, say, how many light bulbs in a moderately sized city or something like that. I guess it depends on the audience for which you're writing. I mean, I think you have to assume.
A million is different. I assume trillion. A million is 10 to the 12, isn't it?
I think so. Well, So billion is 10 to the... Was it a million?
Yeah, that's why they use gene.
Okay, jabs. Gillion. Okay, what else do I have here? Oh, colorful imagery when possible. I'm not actually sure this is any better, but this is the way one of our articles got edited. And it wasn't my editing. The original that came to us said, since the late 1960s, barometric pressure over the Arctic has dropped, and the counterclockwise west-east flow that encircles the Arctic along 55 North has intensified, particularly during the winter months. A stronger circulation around the pole at these altitudes favors more intense storms over northern oceans and milder weather over the continents. Okay, the editor chose to make this a little more specific when the prevailing westerly winds that blow across the North Atlantic from Canada to Europe are abnormally strong. Most of the northern hemisphere is warmer than usual. Northern Europe bathes in mild, moist marine air. Scotland and Norway received even more than their normally generous quota of rain and snow, while southern Europe basks in sunshine. When the westerlies are relatively weak, cold masses, air masses that develop over Russia more readily spill out into Europe. So it sort of gives you a visual picture of what the weather is like in countries that you know. And it uses a lot of colorful words, and literarily it's more pleasing. I don't know whether it's more effective. What do you guys think? Well, these things get checked, and the author has had to have checked this new version. Well, in the larger context, that trend was brought back in another place. But this is the... I think this effect is primarily felt over Europe.
You wouldn't know that in the first paragraph.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of... I mean, that's a massive expansion of the writing.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the record. Yeah. It's a little diplomatic, I would say, if it's supposed to be.
Well, that's good, yeah. Because it's so dry. Yeah, and I mean, I myself kind of, this is still a technical article. This is at the very beginning. This is the first paragraph. And I think it's fun to read something more dry, more than the normal dry fare that we get in technical papers. One can only... Yes. I can get, yeah, we absolutely, the authors have to sign off on every last dotted I and cross T of the articles that we publish. And so whatever is said has to have to be correct, at least as far as the author knows, and he's a pretty knowledgeable person. So we can only assume that it's correct and it's just a colorful departure. And just from the way this is written, I suspect, it's right. There was one editor for Physics Today, I thought must have edited this because he's more colorful. He uses more adjectives than most of us. But it turns out it wasn't he. Okay, what else do I have? Making the language more precise. This is again where sometimes if you examine the language you use every day, in science, you know, just hallway talk, if you just take that sentence and think, you know, really that's not precise the way we toss around these terms. And when you write, you have to re-examine that. So here's something I think that this top paragraph, I felt was quite loose. The bulk properties of the Earth as far as rigidity is concerned, I'm already not sure whether, did he just mean the rigidity of the Earth? Are frequency dependent, rather like silly putty. At seismic or tidal frequencies, the Earth behaves elastically, just as a ball of silly putty. So that's a little redundant. But at much lower frequencies, loads result in an essentially viscous flow of the material. Does anyone know what material he's talking about? Yeah. It must be, I mean, we have a physical feeling because of this nice analogy with the putty ball, but this, I think, from good writing, it's not clear. The material is really the whole Earth itself. I do it. I think.
However. It's like on the other hand.
I think if I were to use however, I would bury it in the sentence. But is very nice. It gives a sort of quick, snappy contrast to the previous sentence. But. It can be very effective. I did. I guess that isn't what bothered me about that. What bothered me was, is he talking about rigidity? This was my attempt to rewrite this sentence. You're right. Okay. So Earth's response to an impact like that of silly putty depends on the frequency of the perturbation. I just thought
the average reader know what perturbation is? Is that jargon?
It's because I didn't know what else to call. I guess actually it's the load. It's a response to, but in this case what this whole thing is dealing with is the load of ice that's on the Earth, and because wherever there's a lot of ice piled up, the Earth's surface has been deformed over many years. And so by the perturbation I meant load. Maybe I should have said load, but then that's It could have been disturbance. I'm not sure that's too much different from perturbation. Maybe load. But you don't think of silly putty as having a load. Or maybe I should have just said frequency of the impact. Actually, what I first rewrote this in terms of time scale. And I had changed everything from frequency to time scale, because you think of silly putty of just bouncing on the floor once. Time scale of the, then I would go with impact. Of an impact.
So what really say, how long
No, an impact is, it lasts for as long as two surfaces are in contact. So you think of silly putty, if you'd bounce on the ball floor, it just hits the floor and bounces up. That's a very short time of impact. Whereas if you have a glacier land on the surface of the earth and it stays there for a long time, that's a long time impact. So Earth's surface rebounds elastically to shifts in load that occur at tidal or seismic frequency or on the time scales of the tides. At the longer frequencies typical of glacial loading and unloading, however, it responds viscoelastically. I don't know. So this is a question. I had gone looked in further on in the same article, find that they did describe it that way. But I'm just not, I don't
have. Do you mean at lower frequencies? Lower frequencies?
Lower frequencies, right. Actually, you know what, I think the, lower did he say, yeah, lower, thank you.
Or if you're going to use time.
I may have had time first, and then when I changed time to frequency, I didn't change longer to lower.
But then if you just do that, it's changed frequency to time to frequency.
Yeah. Well, we're not going to perfect this sentence at this point, but just to give you an idea of, you know, to rewrite that, you have to know a lot, is the problem, because there's a lot of unanswered questions here. Oh, that's good. Good. Okay. Duration. Duration of the impact. Okay, her surface finds elastically shifts in its load that occur at times. Then what do I do here? The occur.
Exactly once a day. Tidal things are something that happen a couple times a day.
And seismic. Now, by seismic frequency, I wasn't sure whether they meant the duration of a single earthquake or the time between earthquakes. So I wasn't actually sure so I'm not sure what seismic frequency is at all. So I wasn't sure. So that's much shorter than a day. Okay. Presumably. I mean, we just don't know exactly what they wanted to say. But that's good. Okay. To rapid shifts in its load that occur because of the tides or seismic events. that we could go with at much over much longer times typical of glacier loading and unloading. It responds. I guess instead of it responds viscoelastically, we could say something like
flow.
But what does flow? I mean, it's not. I had talked about the surface. Earth's surface rebounds. But so I couldn't say it. Earth deforms, or I don't know if there's a word for the general material of the earth. Deforms gradually. Yeah, it's probably.
I mean, I think what they had in mind is that after the glaciers melt, the earth's surface tends to rise, but that occurs over thousands of years. But it does actually.
It's
the Lord Sea is getting shallower and shallower.
Mm-hmm. That's the whole point of this article, is that a lot of sea rise.
Yeah, because the glaciers are melting,
And that's why we can't. That's the point of this article, is that sea level. When we look at sea level rise just by looking at the tidal gauge, we have to take out the factor that's due to the fact that the Earth's surface is rebounding in places where the glaciers sat. So it's the surface is coming back up in places where it had been greatly depressed. In other places, it's sinking. So it's. This is an attempt to account for that.
But if this wouldn't come back, so I mean that's very misleading. If that's what they mean, even the original version saying essentially this is wrong and it's too flat.
Yeah.
That doesn't convey that picture.
Okay. Let's see if I have one. I don't know. Just one more. So whatever. I think this is a quick one, and then. Avoid pitfalls of words. Okay, oh, this is a good example. Pretentious words, stilted phrases. The goal of this study is to develop an effective commercialization strategy for solar energy systems by analyzing the factors that are impeding early commercial projects and by identifying the potential government and industry actions that can facilitate the viability of the projects. Okay, this is bureaucracies. I mean, there's a cute little website with two guys who, not a website, radio program, two guys who give advice on financial matters. And they had a little quiz every week. What did the Fed chairman say? And they would have recording of one of Greenspan's sentences and have someone guess what he meant. So. This is one guess at what this meant. This study will consider why current solar energy systems have not yet reached the commercial stage and what steps industry and government can take to make these systems commercial. Okay. So, you know, there's all these to develop and by analyzing the factors that are can facilitate the viability of. You know, that can. There's usually ways to say it much more directly and with many fewer words. Here's some of the words that are useful to avoid. Is used to detect, just say detects. Is capable of, can. Made the arrangements for, arranged. You know, just a lot more direct way to say it. And then there's these words, extraneous phrases, if you just. Train yourself not to let them in and see if you don't end up with a better sentence.
Okay.
For the following three reasons. And then you enumerate them. I mean, it's not so clear a difference there, but do you find other places where there are? But there are also places.
No, it's a
Okay, it's a bad example. I had that as a hard and fast rule, and I trained myself to avoid it. Now I'm letting it creep back in where it's effective. But I'm just saying that you can sometimes gain a lot just by consciously avoiding certain things and seeing if you don't end up with a better sentence. Don't bother trying to reach me by email.
That's four words. I know, you know he's trying to talk to
you. Well, as I said, there's no Bible of this stuff. Everyone has his own style, and that's wonderful. And sometimes you can identify people by their styles, and that's great. Yeah? I put them right in here. Yeah.
That might be qualified. We qualify. We want to.
Sometimes the words perhaps and maybe. I don't know, depends on the time. I've forgotten what those examples were.
Usually the most frequent is competing questions.
What?
Yeah.
Maybe
good.
Yes. That can be effective. That could be effective. Like you're saying you might think this, but you'd be wrong. See, then you'd use that but really effectively. You're right. As I said, there's not a hard and fast rule. But if you find yourself overusing such phrases, then you might want to get rid of some of them. Okay. Well, I have you guys here. Might get some input to other things that programs that I might make. I don't know how many of you know Jackie Savani, who has been in public relations at Princeton and here. And I've asked her to come. We haven't settled an exact date, but some mid-May to talk about talking to the press when they call to ask you, about something and misquote you. We might want to talk about how to relate to the general press, and probably perhaps dealing with the press offices at your own institution too. But it'd be helpful for me to know, how do I lift this thing up? The black button? There's some of the things we can. Okay, one topic could be giving talks. Another topic could be books. Third one, as I mentioned, was PR, dealing with press. I wonder whether it's useful to have one on talking about how one could make condensed matter more exciting to the public. Yeah, it's related. What? Well, I this would be one where I wouldn't be standing up here. I think it'd be just get everybody in a circle and see if anyone had ideas. So you're saying you can tell them anything?
Well, I think the point is one way you can engage them in the
Well, you can say superfluous things you start and stop. So one or two examples.
But is it, do you think that'd be worthwhile to having a this session?
Yeah. I think it's very
hard to get a solution. Oh, yeah, I wouldn't expect to get a solution to it. Yeah. Well, if we do this thing on books, I want to have Tony Z come, among others. And I think he's the only one here who's written a popular book. And he'll have some thoughts. I think he might say it will be hard to get an audience because there isn't as much inherent interest as there is in superstrings or cosmology. But lack of what? You mean physical models for the condensed matter systems?
Books
for this audience.
Yes, it's a book.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, the field's wide open, probably. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who has? Oh. And I bet he, he's...
But I have not heard of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's one called Stuff. Anyway, Fiona had another one. Is there any other sub-areas of communication? I just mostly wanted to get your feedback on this thing. So, okay, we'll try it one day. Okay. What? We can make it next week, sure. See what we get.
Thank you.
Thank you.